All right, so let's get going. All right. Welcome to Torah in Motion, Parshat HaShavua class. My name is Ruthie Shane. I have given some of the Parshat HaShavua classes before. So those of you who are regulars, you know what to expect. But here we go. All right, so Parshat Vayetze, one of my favorites, one of my most favorite Parshiot. So when we left off last week with Sophia, Yaakov had just co-opted the bracha from Yitzchak, and Rivka was beside herself because she needed to get Yaakov out of town. She was upset. She thought that Esav was going to kill him. She needed to get him out without actually telling Yitzchak why she wanted to get him out of town. And so she engineers Yitzchak into believing, and with rightfully so, that Rivka was very, and Yitzchak too. They were both upset with Esav's wives. And Rivka goes to Yitzchak and says, "I will die if Yaakov takes one of these girls like Esav did." And she makes it sound, even from the text, when she says lo lakach, he will take a woman. She makes it seem immediate, like if we don't do something tomorrow, he's going to run off and marry one of these shiksa girls, and I don't know what I'll do with myself. So she makes it very urgent that to Yitzchak that Yaakov has to go back home to the old country, to Haran, where her family lives, to get a wife. Just like, Yitzchak, your father sent the Eved to get you a wife from, the old country. But we can't wait for somebody else to go. He's just got to go himself, because if he stays here, God knows what will happen. He'll just run off and marry one of these other girls like Esav did. And Yitzchak goes along with that, and he agrees with her, even though it sounds like, he could have argued with her. Now, we don't have any indication in the text that he did argue or he didn't argue. We just see that Rivka says Yaakov has to go and get a wife, and Yitzchak says okay, and he calls Yitzchak in. This is the end of last week's parsha, and he gives him the bracha. He calls it the Birkat Avram he gives him. And, and it is kind of odd that he's allowing his son to leave the Holy Land when he himself was not allowed to leave the Holy Land to get a wife. But he does. And the Meshech Chachma, who is a 19th century, which now we would call modern, Parshan, who is also known as Meir Simcha HaKohen, very very modern thinker and writer, Parshan on not only Chumash but on Rambam too. This is his suggestion that Yitzchak perceived. This is Yitzchak, who is blind, and physically blind, but he has, he is more attuned to things that are more spiritual or more just nothing. It's more than just seeing with his eyes. Meshech Chachma suggests that Yitzchak has some premonition that the Brit Bein HaBetarim, the bracha, the Brit that Avram and God made together when he cut up those animals, and he was put into a deep trance, and he was promised that his offspring would become a great nation. But there would be a time where his offspring would go into exile, and they would be enslaved, and they would have a terrible time. But they would eventually be rescued, or they would leave their enslavement with wealth, and they would come home, and it would be the fourth generation that would come back. And Yitzchak had this image that this is was going to be take this is going to play out in Yaakov's life, because Yaakov is being forced into exile. He is going to be a stranger in a strange land. He knows nothing about the family back in Padan Aram. He's going to be a stranger in a strange land. And Yitzchak doesn't know what's going to happen to him, but he has this sense that Yaakov is the embodiment, the fulfillment of that Brit Ben HaBetarim, the covenant between the pieces, and that this is destiny, which it means this is, you know, this is God's plan. And so he's loath to let him go, but he also feels that he has to let him go, and that only Yaakov is going into Galut, not Esav. And even if Yitzchak had ever had the idea that both of his sons would be the progenitors of the nation of Avraham, the nation that would bring God's name to the world, even if he had ever thought that, now he is coming to the realization that Esav is not part of the shalshelet, of the chain. Esav is not going to go into Galut. Esav is going to stay home. Yaakov is going to go, and history is going to go along with Yaakov. And so he gives him the Birkat Avram at the end of the previous parsha. And that's where he says to him, do I have that? I don't think I did that. No, I didn't. I didn't write that down. Sorry, I did not. But the Brit Ben HaBetarim we can all look at. So just to refresh your minds about that, in case you forgot what it's all about, it's in chapter 15. So in Bereishit, chapter 15, verse 13. So let me share my screen and I can get you some help with that. Let's see. Is this going to work? Nope, that's not what I want. Sorry, you have to try that again. Oh, it's going to be. But I had that open. Oh, I know it is. It's here. Okay, sorry. All right, we're going to go to Bereishit, chapter 15. Mm-hmm. Here we go. This is the Brit Ben HaBetarim, the covenant between the pieces. Avram has to cut the animals up, and then God puts him into a deep sleep. And here in verse 13, the famous words, Vayomer LaAvram, God says to him in this deep, deep trance, Yadoa teida ki ger yezarachav be'eretz lo lahem, know that your offspring will be strangers in a land that does not belong to them. Va'avadum, they will be enslaved. Be'inu otam, and they will oppress them. Arba me'ot shana, a maximum of 400 years. V'gam et hagoy asher yavodu dan anochi, but that nation that enslaves them, I will judge them when the time comes. V'achrekein yatzu b'ruchush gadol, and afterwards they will leave with great wealth. Hold on to that idea of great wealth, stranger in a strange land. They will be enslaved. They will leave with great wealth. You, you, Avram, you will die in peace. You won't see any of this. So this is the future, but you'll never see it. Don't worry. Vidor revi'i, the fourth generation, Yashuvu hena, will come back here to Canaan. That's the idea. The fourth generation. And Yitzchak is looking at himself as the second generation. Avram, one. Yitzchak, two. Yaakov is the third generation. And now he's watching his son, Yaakov, the third generation, going off into Galut. And he hopes and prays that the whole of the Brit will be fulfilled. Yaakov might suffer, but he'll come back with a wife, a family, a lot of people, rechush gadol, a lot of wealth, and he will come home again. That's what Yitzchak, this is what the Meshech Chachma suggests, that this is what is going through Yitzchak's mind. And I might add that Rav Soloveitchik, perhaps picking up on the Meshech Chachma, or, you know, taking it up all by himself, which is not a stretch, he too comes to the conclusion that not only perhaps I've never heard that he mentioned Yitzchak, but the Rav always said that Yaakov believed that he was the embodiment of this brit bein habitarim, the brit between the pieces, and that whether the Meshech Chachma is right, whether Yitzchak told Yaakov, or whether Yaakov figured it out for himself, just like the Rav did, that looking at himself, he is the fourth generation from Avraham, and he lands up in Lavan's house, a stranger in a strange land. Lavan works him to death. And in the end, what does Yaakov get? A lot of children, a lot of wives, and a lot of sheep and goats and animals. Rechush gadol, a lot of wealth. And he does come back. So it's a big thing, thinking that you are the fourth generation and that the Brit Ben Habatarim is being embodied in you. But the question is, who is the fourth generation that returns? Yaakov is the third generation. Who is the fourth generation? Who is that going to be? Now, this is something Yaakov doesn't know right now, but we know, so we can think about that for just a moment. Who will be the fourth generation?
His kids.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, if Yaakov is thinking that he's the third generation, then who is the herald's son? It's going to be Yaakov's son. But then what should he do when that son gets born? That son, the birth of that son should be the impetus to get up and leave, right? Fourth son is here. It's time to leave. What happens actually in the story? Now, we haven't gone through it, but you know, we're all adults. We've read this, at least 50 times. Does Yaakov leave when Reuven is born?
Yes.
He does? He leaves?
Yosef,
right. Yosef is not the firstborn of his children. The firstborn of his children is Reuven. He doesn't leave when Reuven is born, nor when Shimon, Levi, or Yehuda. He doesn't leave until Yosef is born. He thinks that Yosef is his truly firstborn son. His answer, Yaakov's answer to who is the herald's son, who is the Bechor, Yaakov's answer leads to the tragic story of his family and the nation which develops from that family. But my question is Yaakov's answer the only one? Does the divine author have another opinion? Does God have another opinion as to who the herald's son is or is not? And how can we find that? How can we find out what the divine author, God himself, he is the divine author. How does he communicate with us? I've hinted at this before in past lectures, shiurim. But God speaks to us through his court filings, as they say nowadays. He speaks to us through his text, through the way he writes his text, through the way he structures his texts, the words he uses and the way he gathers the words and the way he arranges the words. From that structure, we can get a window into God's opinion. He doesn't always come out and say anything. God almost never editorializes. But we would like to know what God thinks about Yaakov's choices when he is in Padan Aram. Are Yaakov and God on the same page? That's the question. And so now let's look at the structure of Vayetze for clues left for us, the readers, by the divine author. That's what we need to do tonight. Okay. It's a big job. So I'm just going to introduce it to you and start you on it, because it would take us the better part of a year to really give this all the attention it needs. And so what I'm going to do first is show you how we can break up Parshat Vayetze, which is a beautiful parsha, into its chiastic structure. It is a chiasm, and it's structured beautifully by the divine author. And I would direct you also to notice that this is one of only two or three parashot which are one giant paragraph. There are no paragraph breaks. There are no parshiot in this whole sedra, Vayetze. It's just one block of words, no paragraphs. It's one whole story. And the only other parsha in Sefer Breshit, and perhaps in all of Torah, but definitely in Sefer Breshit, in the book of Genesis, the only other parsha that is a block of words like this is Miketz. Vayetze is the story of Yaakov. Miketz is the story of Yosef. And the Yaakov story and the Yosef story are one. And they are both chiastic, and they are both blocks. So now let's look at that. So keep your Tanakh, your Chumash open to Vayetze. All you have to do is flip the pages and you'll see there's no breaks. It's just black and white. And it goes from one margin to the other. There are no breaks until the end of the parsha. Interesting. Okay. So now I'm going to share screen again and show you some wonderful things. Okay. All right. So right here, can you all see this? Good? Yeah. Okay. So this is a summary of the chiastic structure of Parshat Vayetze, just as citations, chapter, verse, and a quickie one-line summary of what each of these elements contains or is about. So the chiasm of Parshat Vayetze is broken up into A through H elements. That's three, six, it's eight elements, I believe. A through H. So remember, a chiasm is a structure like this. It's really an X, but we'll just look at the top of the X. So we have elements on this side and elements on this side, and they are parallel or sometimes anti-parallel, but they are, you can see that they match up. And so we have A, A1, B, B1, C, C1, D, D1, until we get to the center. That's the center of the chiasm, is the turning point, the nexus. It's the most important thing that happens in the story. It is what the author believes is the center of the story, because that's how he structures the whole thing. So we can break up Vayetze into these eight elements, going from A to H and going down one side of the chiasm. Then we hit the center, and then we go back up the other side in reverse order. So element H1, G1, F1, E1, D1, C1, back to A1, where A1, which is at the end of the parsha, is parallel to the element A at the beginning of the parsha. So let's take a look at that. The parsha opens in, this is Bereshit, chapter 28, and it starts at verse 10. Don't worry about how the Christians broke this up. So we're just going to use their numbering because it's more easy. So Yaakov, I say, meets divine messengers, and I color-coded it into navy blue. You'll see in a minute. The opposite is at the very end. You could see this for yourself. If you turn to the very end of the parsha, you see the same thing. Yaakov meets divine messengers. Divine messengers are Malachi Elohim, and Yaakov meeting them is the verb poga. Okay. So when you see something like that, when you see bookends, you say to yourself, I got a chiasm here. The trick is to find out all the other intervening elements and find the center. That's always hard to do. All right. So what does this look like if you look at the text? Whoops, wait, let me get this back up to the beginning. All right, here we are at the beginning of Vayetze. Perek Chavches. I'm sorry, this is only the Hebrew, but if you're following along in the English, it'll be just fine. Yaakov leaves Beersheba, and he's going towards Haran, that is back in Mesopotamia, from whence they came. Vayifga ba. Makom, vayifka means, and he bumped into, okay? He bumped into something, a place, all right? Things happened, and he has a dream, the dream of the ladder, and on the ladder he sees Malachi Elohim. I've bolded it for you. So we have paga, that's the verb for bumping into, Malachi Elohim, divine messengers. And things happen in this, the rest of the dream, which we're not focusing on right now, but I want to show you the end of the parsha to see the back end of the chiasm. And that's here. Whoops. Okay. This is the other side of the chiasm. This is A, and this is now A1. And it's the very last two verses of the parsha. Again, Yaakov is going on his way. Actually, he's not going to Haran. Now he's coming back to Canaan from Haran. And there's our verb again. Vayifke'u. Something that now it's a they bumped into him. Who bumped into him? Malachi Elohim, the divine messengers. So on the one side, we have Yaakov bumping into something. On the other side, these Malachi Elohim bump into him. But we have the verb bumping into Yaakov, or Yaakov bumping into, and these Malachi Elohim. They serve as the bookends for the whole parsha, from the beginning to the end. And now how do we look at the middle, or how do we get to the middle? Okay, so let me go back to here. All right, so here now, do you see, are there any questions yet? Okay, I can only see some of you on the screen. So if you want to speak up, you may unmute yourselves and speak up. So now you got the idea. So the second element is going to be in pink when I go back to the big screen. And that is going to be about Yaakov putting up a monument and making a vow. You will remember the parsha after the dream, after he wakes up from the dream of the ladder. He takes the stone and he puts it up and he sets up a matseva, a monument, and he makes a neder. A neder is a vow. It's a promise, a very strong oath. Promise that he makes to God that he, when he comes back this way, he is going to make a Beit Elohim. He's going to build a temple for God in this place, and he's going to give God, or the temple, or some combination of that, a tenth of everything that he has. That's the vow that he makes. That's right after the ladder dream, at the beginning of his journey. Now, something happens. At the end on the other side, when he's leaving Lavan's house, he's actually running away from Lavan, and he's got with him all his wives, all his children, and all of his stuff, and Lavan chases after him, remember? And they finally meet at a mountain, and they have a big blow up. You know, they scream at each other, and eventually they calm down and they make a treaty. It's really like an oath that they swear to each other. I won't come after you, and you won't come after me. And this will be the dividing line. This will be the monument, the marking place where I'll stay on my side and you'll stay on your side. So again, Yaakov takes a stone and sets it up, and he swears an oath. So that's element B right here. Yaakov sets up a monument and makes a vow. And here's B1. The actions are the same. The people are different. What they're saying is different, but the actions are the same. So let me just give you a quickie look at that. Here is, go to the top first. Whoops. Okay, so here is that B element after the dream of the ladder. Okay, we have these words. Yaakov vayashkem, he yashkems in the morning. He takes a stone, vayikach et ha'even, and he sets up a matseva. And vayidor Yaakov neder, he makes a vow. And in the vow, he says things like, God, if you will take care of me and give and watch over me and guard me and stay with me and give me food to eat. Lechem le'echol. Those words are important. Then I promise that you will be my God. This is our promise to you. This is my promise to you. God doesn't say anything. And then Yaakov says, this Evan that I have here that I poured oil on, that I am setting up, is a matseva, is a memorial to this vow that I vowed. So the matseva, that the stone that you set up, is a memorial. Just like we put a matseva on a grave. It's a memorial. It says, here lies so-and-so. Here he's putting up this matseva as a memorial to the vow that he is swearing now. Okay, at the end of the parsha, the same thing happens, the same idea happens when Lavan catches up with him and they're running away. And after they have their big fight and they all settle down and they decide they're going to settle this without killing each other, then Yaakov takes a stone and he sets it up as a matseva. Same actions, different situation, but the actions are the same, parallel actions. And then they both have words about it. Lavan famously names the matseva. He names it Yegar Sahaduta right here. Yegar Sahaduta. And Yaakov calls it Gal Aid, which means a pile of stones that act as witness to the covenant, the treaty that we two are making. And Lavan says, you're not going to marry any more women. You're not going to mistreat my daughters, blah, 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 blah. And Lavan says, okay. And this pile of stones, this matseva, this pile of stones will be a matseva. They're just repeating themselves. And then the matseva becomes the witness. The stone monument becomes the witness that they are not going to ever cross over that line to bother each other. And then we have the words Vayishava Yaakov. Yaakov swears. That's the parallel language to Vayidor Neder. He made a neder. And then he calls his brothers, which are the Bnei Lavan, Le'echol Lechem. Now, it's not the same action that occurred before in element B, but it's the same words. Lechem le'echol. Since this is on the other side of the chiasm, it's reversed. In element B, it was lechem le'echol. And here it's le'echol lechem. And then they all, quote, go, and they all spend the night on the mountain, Vayalinu Bahar. And the last thing that happens is Vayashkem Baboker. Somebody gets up in the morning. In element B, who got up in the morning? Yaakov. In element B1, the action is the same, but sometimes the people who are doing the action are different. And that's very clear here. The one who gets up early in the morning in element B1 is Lavan. And the words Vayashkem Baboker come at the end of the element, whereas in B, element B, Vayashkem Baboker was the first words of the element. Again, the beautiful anti-parallel of the two elements, because one element is going down and the other element is going up. So they're going to be like in different directions on either side of the chiasm. Okay. There's a lot of stuff that I am skipping here because we don't have the time, but I really want to just bring out some things because it's intertextuality is also at play here. There are words that are being used here that echo previous stories, which give us pause and should make us shudder a little bit. So just a few instances of previous stories that seem to be intruding into this story. And as Judy Klitzner would say, and they undermined the text. So have you ever heard these words before? This is in the very beginning of the Parsha. Yaakov gets here, remember, and he dreams a dream, and in the dream there's the ladder, verse 12. So I'm sorry to skip around. I'm back in the beginning of the parasha, chapter 28, verse 12. He dreams, and there's a ladder, mutzav arza. It's like stuck in the ground. Verosho, see my little hand here. Verosho magia hashamayma. You ever heard? Rosho Bashamayim. Any takers? Chaim? Either.
Tower of Babel.
Very good. Give that man a Coke. Yes, it's from the Tower of Babel. Absolutely right. Good. Let me go over here. And that is that is source number 3. Here it is. Here we go. Yes, this is Bereshit chapter 11, verses 3 through 7. Tower of Babel is Bereshit chapter 11, Genesis chapter 11. And these are remember the people, they gather together, they make bricks, and they say, we're going to build here in verse 4. Hava. Well, they say Hava twice. Ayomru here. Hava. That's purple word. Nivne lanu. Let's build for us. Ir umigdal. A city and a tower. Verosho bashamayim. And its head, its top is in the heavens. Naase lanu. Shame. We will make a name for ourselves. We will make ourselves famous. And we will be at the top of that tower into the heavens. And the words Hava, Hava, which will reappear, unfortunately, in our parsha also. So the ladder that he sees in his dream is reaching, and its head, the top of it, is in the heavens. And that's a shivery echo of the Tower of Babel, which was a negative story. And here, this ladder that Yaakov is dreaming of, it seems to be a positive story. There are Malachi Elohim, there are divine messengers going up and down the ladder, and even God himself is standing on it, or him. But God is in the dream. So it can't be bad, but yet there's this little intrusion, this echo of something dark, something wrong. And it just sits there. and it's bothersome, and it should be bothersome, and it should sit with us as we read through the story of Yaakov's story. There's something's not quite right, and it's just bothersome. Rosho Hashamayma, just like the tower. Okay, I just want to plant that idea in your head so you don't sleep tonight. Okay, so now keep going. All right, so now element three, we're just dissecting the parsha, and we come to after the dream and he sets everything up, then chapter 29 starts, no indentation, no paragraph, just 29 starts by in its, and this element, see, look how small it is. It's one verse. Sometimes an element in a chiasm can be, you know, lines and lines and lines of text. And then you just get one line, and that's its own element. It stands alone. And this one is so beautiful. Here, Yaakov is on his way to Haran. He's all alone, and he has nothing. He's just, as he once described himself, I just had my staff in my hand. Vayisa Yaakov Raglav. Yaakov lifts up his legs. Vayelech Arza B'nei Kedem. And he travels. He starts his journey towards the east. Eastward ho. Yaakov is starting his own Lech Lecha journey. Yaakov is on a journey to find out who he is. When we left him at the end of the previous parsha, he said he was Esav. He wanted to be Esav. He wanted what Esav was and had. Yaakov doesn't really know who he is. He's confused. He needs to find out. We need him to find out who he is and acknowledge who he really is for himself. We might say we want him to know who he is as opposed to what he wants to be or what he thinks he is, but he has to come to recognize who he is. So this journey to Haran is his own private Lech Lecha, much different from Avram's. Now, on the other side, you would expect we should be able to find of some similar verse describing how he picked up and left the house of Lavan and journeyed on home. So let's go down quite a bit till we get to, oh, here we are. Oh, well, wait a minute. Ruthie, what did you do? Let me go to the end here. Back up. Okay, we have A1. We had the pink B. That was the Lavan thing. But then what the heck is all of this black text that I'm skipping over right now? Until you look at the structure, you don't realize what this is. This is an intrusion. This is a story within the story. And it's not, it doesn't have any element that is parallel to it. It just sticks out. I've labeled it the Exodus because that's what it is. It's the Exodus story told before the Egyptian Exodus. This is Yaakov's personal Exodus from his personal galut. And it is patterned. No. It is what it is. The Exodus from Egypt is patterned on this Exodus. We don't have time again to look for it, but I would urge you to look in Parshat B'Shalach in Shemot, Exodus chapter 14, in that Parsha, starting with verse 5. Exodus chapter 14, starting with verse 5, compare it to all these black letters here, which comprise Yaakov's Exodus from the house of Lavan. It starts with the Lavan halach l'gzos, when Lavan goes to shear his sheep, and that's when Yaakov makes his big escape. So, and that escape is starting in, I'll give you the reference here. Well, here we go. It's right around, well, it is in chapter 31. Oh, I have it on the sheet. Sorry. What am I doing? Here it is. See, it says down here, the Exodus. It's chapter 31, verses 19 through 43. That's a big chunk of text. But as you see what I've done, I put it into a little box here. It's outside of the chiasm, of the chiastic structure, and it's out, and it sticks out like a big fat thumb. And it's supposed to stick out because to bring it into focus as the Exodus before the Exodus, which also, by the way, gives more credence to the theory that Yaakov is only one iteration of the Brit Bein Habitarim. That Brit that God made with Avram about your people will be in exile and they will suffer, but I will always save them and bring them home. That's a recurring promise. It's not a one-off. It is repeated in every generation. And this I learned from David Silver, and some of you will remember him teaching this, that the Brit Bein Habitarim, the covenant between the pieces, is not a one-off. It didn't happen once, and that was it. It happened in Lot's time. Lot's exodus from the city of Sodom has the same elements of the Egyptian exodus story. And Yaakov's exodus from the house of Lavan has the same elements. Or we could turn that around and say the Egyptian exodus is patterned on the previous exodi of Lot and Yaakov. And does anybody remember what we would be referring to when we say the Brit Bein Habitarim, the covenant between the pieces, is an everlasting promise that stands for us in every generation? This is on the source sheet. Very good, Chaim Fruchter. Thank you. Yes. Every Pesach night at the Seder, we say, V'hi she'amda lavotenu v'lanu. Get out of the way. Okay. This stands for our fathers and for us, has always stood. The he is the Brit Bein Habitarim. The Brit, the covenant between the pieces, is what has always stood for our forefathers and for us. Shelo echad bilavad amad aleinu l'chalotenu. It just didn't happen once. It happens again and again. B'chol dor v'dor omdim aleinu l'chalotenu. In every generation, there's somebody who wants to destroy us. V'hakodesh Baruch Hu, God himself, matzilenu miyadam. He saves us from their hand. That is the recurring Brit Bein Habitarim. Lot, Yaakov, Egypt, and on into the future. It's the once and future promise. So
this is really where Arami Ovid Ovi could be Lavan.
Exactly. Of course, yes, yes. He is one of them. Yes, exactly. Very good. Okay, so now I digressed. I just had to. Okay, so let's go back. Okay, so that's what this block of the Exodus and the words that are yellowed. If you go to the website Torah in Motion, you can download this. You don't have to print it, but you can just download it and have it. These things that are yellowed here, these verses that are yellowed, are repeated in the Egyptian Exodus story. And there's other stuff. There's a gold. This is a gold mine of other references to other instances or incidents, especially in Miketz. These words here that I have blued and greened and yellowed will recur in Miketz, especially in the confrontation between Yehuda and Yaakov. When Yaakov says, I will not let you take Binyamin down to Egypt to get more grain. And Yehuda says, let me take him. And he says, Anochi e'ervenu. Miyadi tivakshenu. He is echoing these words that Yaakov spoke to Lavan. And there's more to the story than that. I can't go into it now. One day, Be'ezrat Hashem, I will be able to share that with you. But I'm just pointing it out. You might be able to figure it out for yourselves, but just be aware of that. Okay, so wait. So now that was We were at sea. Wait. Remember, sea, element C was just Yaakov picking up his legs. Okay, but in the on the other side of the chiasm, we need to have that word lifting. So even though in element C, it sounded kind of goofy to say he lifted up his legs, why not just say he went? But when you say lifted up your legs on one side of the chiasm, you can use the word lift in a larger meaning. And it's so right here. This is on the other side of the chiasm. This is verse 17. When Yaakov is leaving Laban's house, Vayakom Yaakov vayisa et banav ve'et nashav al hagimalim. Yaakov gets up and he lifts up not his legs, because he's not all traveling by himself. He lifts up his children and his wives and he puts them on the camels. So we need that verb lifts up in the parallel element, because he's not lifting his legs now. He's lifting up his kids and his wives and putting them on the camels. And he leads them away with all his cattle and all rechush. There's that word rechush, is the rechush gadol, the great wealth promised in the covenant of the pieces. And he leaves with all of this stuff and he's going home to Yitzchak, his father, Arza Kena'an. He went from Kena'an to Haran. And now on the other side of the key, of the center of the chiasm, he's going home again to Canaan. Okay, now, we have one more time. Okay, now, so that's element C. Element D is it's not strange. It's just interesting. Okay, so now Yaakov is in Haran. Remember, seen at the well. You know, the shepherds are there and they're lounging around, and Yaakov says, who are you? Why are they talk. They say, we can't roll the stone off the well until we're all here. And Yaakov grumbles about that. But this whole element D that's stretching from verse 2 in chapter 29 and goes on for a while. And this is this whole scene here. What do you notice? And I made it very clear. What's the word that jumps off the page?
Sown.
What?
Sown.
Sown. Yes. Flocks. Sheep. That is ad nauseum. That's why I labeled it. This is element D. Yaakov and sheep. The parallel on the other side is going to be the same thing. Yaakov and sheep. All right. So not only is it all sheep, but there's another word that fits right in there with sheep. I underlined it. Rachel. Rachel, it's the name of a girl, but what does it mean? Sheep.
It's a little sheep.
A little sheep. A shepsula. Yeah. A shepsula. Right. The most prominent thing about Lavan and Haran is sheep. All of this sheep, and just buried in the sheep is another one, Rachel. She's one of the sheep. And it's striking that this word sheep is repeated so many times. You can't ignore it. There's something about all the sheep. It's like the shiny object that is dangling in front of Yaakov. Is he going to fall for it? Is he going to ignore it? Or is he going to be what's that word? Oh, God, it just ran away from me. Is he going to be totally sucked in to this, to the sheep business and the lure of the sheep? And Rachel is just part of the sheep. Look at the way the divine author describes how he sees her for the first time. Okay.
He sucked as in Vayishak.
No, I haven't gotten there yet. Hold on. Before that, that's what he does. But what does he see? Look at verse, what is that, 10? Verse 10, chapter 29, verse 10. Yeah. Vayehi ka'asher ra'a Yaakov et Rachel, bat Lavan, ve'et tzon Lavan. He sees Rachel and the sheep at the same time. Rachel and the sheep. Rachel and the sheep. Rachel is a sheep. He sees her as one of the sheep. Okay. Then after he sees her and the sheep, it's not like he saw her and he jumped up and pushed the stone off the well. He saw her and the sheep. That says something. After we saw sheep here all this time. There's something unsettling about that. He sees her and the sheep. She's part of the sheep. Vayigash, then he approaches, he rolls the stone off the well, and then he, now I've yellowed these two words because the divine author is using the same letters in a very strange way. So he gives the sheep water. He waters the sheep of Lavan, his mother's brother, and he waters Rachel. She's a sheep and he gives her water. And then he cries. Now, why did I translate it that way? Because the words are the same. Yud, shin, kuf. Yud, shin, kuf. Did he kiss the sheep and then kiss Rachel? If he gave water to the sheep, did he give water to Rachel? Vayashk etzon, vayashk l'Rachel. Now, everybody translated Yishak, where that's the conjugation of the nun, shun, shin, kuf, where the nun drops out. You know, it's this grammar baseball. But Vayishak Yaakov is translated, and he kissed her. But without the nekudot, he watered the tzon, and he watered the sheep. He watered the sheep, and he watered a sheep, all the sheep, and then the one sheep. Or he kissed the sheep, and he kissed her. Something about the equivalence of the tzon and Rachel is disturbing. This story is, everybody says, oh, it's like another well story. You know, you meet the girl. It's just like Rivka and the Eved, except there's one glaring difference. Actually, there are many glaring differences, but one strikes you right away. Rivka gave water to the Eved's animals and to him. Does Rachel give Yaakov anything? No. It's all from him. He's the one who is fascinated by her. He's obsessed with her. And she has no reaction. She doesn't do anything for him. She doesn't offer him water. She doesn't do anything. He's doing everything. She doesn't have any reaction. And it leads us to question whether his obsession with her is actually reciprocated. Does she feel the same way about him that he seems to feel about her? That's a question that I'm floating out there. I'm not going to answer it now, but I want you to think about that. Now, in the short amount of time that we have left, let me just show you the D1. This is the parallel element. Goes a little further because there's a lot of it. There's a lot of red. And as you can see, I didn't bold the tzon, I yellowed it. And you see how much tzon there is? This is the part of the story where Yaakov, instead of picking up and going back home, he gets sucked into another 6 years of working for Lavan to get more sheep. More sheep, more sheep. And this is after Yosef was born. Yosef is born and he still didn't leave. He stayed to get more sheep. There's something very disturbing about that, that he was so consumed with sheep, 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 that even when Yosef was born and you would think he would be encouraged to leave and fulfill his destiny as, you know, the fourth generation, no, no, no. He delays and he's sucked into the sheep stuff again. It's very distressing, very disturbing. But wait a minute, I cannot let you go without looking at the center of all of this. Okay, so we're going to skip a few of these. Get away out of the way. Okay, we're going to skip a few of these things, all right? So we're here only at D. I'm going to skip all the way down to when Yaakov marries Leah, because I need you to see that. All right? Okay, so remember, Yaakov says to Lavan after working for 7 years, he says, okay, Hava et Ishti, Hava, the same as a tower builder said, Hava. He uses that same tower word, very disturbing. He says, Hava et Ishti, Hava, just like that Hava word is very terrible. Well, okay. Lavan makes a party, a mishteh. You can barely see it here in the green. I'm sorry. He makes a mishteh. It's a drinking party. And Yaakov gets drunk. And so it's really easy for Lavan to bring anybody into the tent where he is. Listen to the description. This is element F. It's the description of Leah's marriage. Vayehi ba'erev. Vayikach Leah. He took Leah. Vayave ota elav. And he brought her to him. Vayehi baboker. Vihinehi Leah. What does that remind you of? Vayehi ba'erev. Vayehi baboker. What is happening here? What is the divine author intimating?
It's the creation story again.
Creation. First day.
This is Ma'aseh Bereshit. This is the creation story. This is the creation of the nation. This is it. Leah's marriage. Leah is the Chava here. She is the Isha. She's the chief wife. She is Isha. She's part of the creation story. Her marriage is as monumental, as foundational as the creation of the world. Vayi ba'erev, vayikach, vayaveh. That remind you of the creation of Chava herself? If you have your Bereshit, if you have your Chumashim, turn to the creation, that second chapter, chapter 2, to the creation of Chavala. I don't think I put it in here. No, I did not. All right, so I'm going to have to stop the share for a minute and go to my other. Hold on. Oh, we're running out of time. Okay, I can't do the share. You have to look in your Tanakh, in Bereshit, chapter 2, that the point where Adam is put into a deep sleep, like Yaakov, drunk, asleep, and God takes he cuts out one side of him and fashions it into Isha. So I'm in Bereshit chapter 2. Very good. Chapter 2, verse 22. Okay. So Adam is sleeping because he's more than drunk, but he's in a tardema. Good word. He takes a side out of him. He closes up the flesh. And then in verse 22, asher lakach mina Adam leisha. He turns that side of the man. He builds it up into Isha. Vayivi eha el ha Adam. He took it and he made a woman and he brought her to him. That's the same language that we're used, that we had here. That's the same language of.
Where do you see that Yaakov was drunk? I don't see that Yaakov was drunk.
But yeah, oh, yeah, look at the verse before verse 23 in Vayetze. Vayas Mishte. Mishte is a drinking party. Yaakov was drinking that night.
That's a very big stretch.
Okay.
You don't, no, it's not.
It's not a big stretch in the sense that why does the author tell us that Lavan made a mishteh? Why not just say Lavan gathered everybody and it was a wedding.
It was a wedding. That's what you eat and drink at a wedding.
No.
You're reducing Yaakov to really almost to the level of an Esav, and it bothers me.
Well, wait a minute. I know it is very bothersome. This whole story is bothersome. The mishteh is a drinking party. Mishteh doesn't come with good connotations. Mishteh is always a dubious thing. So, and it is questionable here, but clearly Leah's marriage is foundational. And the construction, Vayehi ba'erev, Vayehi ba'boker. And then what does he, now this is not what, these are the words of the creation story, of the Bereshit story, but they're used in a different way. Yeah, and then he says here, and it's Leah, and he thought it was somebody else. And he says to Lavan, Ma zot asit li. Where did you hear these words before? Ma zot asit. Who said that to whom in the garden story? Come on, guys. Remember? After.
Hashem says to the woman.
Yes, God says to the woman. Remember. Okay, this is chapter 3 in Bereshit. Chapter 3, verse 13. Vayomer yukevavke Elohim la'isha. He says to Isha, Mazot asit. Zot, what did you do? Mazot asitali. Now, it's the same words from the Gan story, but Lavan is saying them. It doesn't matter who is saying them. It's the words themselves. This recurrence of the words from that story. Vayehi ba'erev, vayehi ba'boker, vayikach Leah, vayaveh ota elav. And then mazot asit. He calls her, remember, who calls his wife Zot, before she gets another name. It's the end of that. It's the next verses in, go back to chapter 2, verse. This is chapter 2 in Bereshit. After God brings the Isha to him, in verse 23 of chapter 2. Everybody with me?
It's Chava.
No, he doesn't call her Chava yet. In verse 23 of chapter 2.
After he calls her Chava.
Yeah, but first he calls her Vayomer Ha'adam, Zot Hapa'am, Zot Hapa'am, Etzem Me'atzmai, Basar Mi'Bisari, Lizot Yikare Isha. He calls her Zot twice, and then he says, Zot, her name is Isha. After the whole story is over, she gets another name, Chava. But the Isha, the first Isha of the first man, create humanity. She is Zot. And then it's, so now this takes on more meaning. Vayomer el Lavan, he says to Lavan, Ma Zot. He's not calling her Zot, but we're hearing the echo of the Bereshit story where Isha, his mate, his wife, the one God made for him, is Zot. And then that word Zot reappears in the next few verses. Laban says, okay, you know, we don't give for the younger one before the first one. And yeah, Laban calls her Zot. He says, Laban says to Yaakov, okay, in verse 27, I'm here, right here. Male Shavua Zot. You know, finish the Sheva Brachos, the 7 days of celebration for Zot. V'nitana lecha gamet Zot. Now, for Laban, all women are just Zot. He's calling his daughters Zot and Zot. He doesn't even use their names. Zot and Zot. Okay, and then Yaakov vayas Cain vayemale Shavua Zot. Yaakov did as he was told, and he completed the 7 days of celebration for Zot. Leah is Zot. She is Isha. She is Chava. She is his mate. She's the one. This is how I'm reading this. The divine author is using all of these words from the Gan story, the garden story, and Maaseh Bereishit to telegraph to us that he, God, considers Leah to be his proper wife, his chief wife, his first wife, his wife. And then we have element G, which I'm not going to go into, and element H. This is all about Rachel.
And Vayehav is the Hava.
Again.
So he is the Hav.
Yes, that Hava business. It's so.
This is the correction of the Hav.
It could be. Yeah. It could be, except that when Rachel doesn't have children, what does she say to Yaakov? So element H is Rachel doesn't have any children. And Leah starts having children. The other side of the chiasm is now Rachel complains about not having children, and she tells Yaakov what she thinks. And she says to Yaakov, Vatomer el Yaakov, Hava li banim. He said about her to Lavan, Hava ishti. She turns around and uses the same word and says that to him, Hava li banim. Give me children. Just like Yaakov said to Lavan, give me my wife. There's something, it's parallel, but there's something strange, something unnerving about that. But this is what I want to end with right here. The center of the chiasm, which is the center of the whole parsha, this is God's construction, the center, because you can clearly see that this verse, Vayehav gam Rachel Meleah, and he worked for 7 years, and God saw that she was snu'a Leah, and she has children, but Rachel is akara. This verse, element H, is Rachel cannot have children. The other side of the chiasm is the parallel. Rachel can't have children, and what does she do about it? She talks to Yaakov, and they get angry with each other. In between is this, in black letters. These Lamed Bet, Lamed Gimel, Lamed Dalet, Lamed He, these verses are the description of Leah's first four children. They are the center of the whole Parsha. The divine author is telling us Leah and her children are the most important thing here. Not to Yaakov, but to God. The divine author is telling us, this is what I think, God thinks. Leah is Chava, Leah is Isha, Leah is the mother of the nation, and her children are the center of the story. The only person who doesn't recognize that right now is Yaakov. And tragedy follows in their footsteps. Now, I've run out of time, way over time. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry I had to hold you back so far. And I'm so thankful that you did stay to listen. The chiasm, stretches out over the entire parasha. But what I really wanted to show you is what I feel is this. We can hear, we can feel the divine author telegraphing his opinion to us. Yaakov loves Rachel. He wants Rachel. Yosef is the Bechor, blah, 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 blah. That's what Yaakov says. But what does God think? I believe that he's telling us what he thinks through the way he structures the whole parsha and the way he uses language, the way he uses intertextuality. He's taking words from these stories which highlight who he's talking about.
The chiasm is actually created by Yehuda. The center is not the four children of Leah, but Yehuda, the end of the four children.
He's the fourth one. Yeah. This is the way, you know, there are other ways of dividing it up, but yeah. because this verse here, Vayehav Gam et Rachel, is paralleled by Vatera Rachel ki lo yeldala Yaakov. Rachel is Akara, Vatera Rachel ki lo yelda. These two verses are saying the same thing. I believe that they are like bookending. They are surrounding this whole center. The center is the birth of all four of her children. Bing, 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 bing. These four children are a unit.
Surely it's about Yehuda, not about the four of them.
At this point?
No, throughout the Tanakh.
Well, later on, yeah. You could argue that, but then I don't see how you would, where would you put the other three children? Where would you put their verses? That's the thing.
Yehuda is the culmination of, as he was when he was Joseph.
I hear what you're saying, but I'm just looking at the way the verses settle out, and I can't construct it any other way.
If you can, it makes no sense because one of those four children is Shimon, who is completely irrelevant.
Well, wait, but at this point, they're not. So what happens later is what happens later. But at this point in the story, they're four little kids. No, they all have potential.
That's not probably correct. That's improbable.
Okay. All right.
Shimon tells you that it's impossible.
I'm not arguing that in the future they all have different outcomes, but Ba'asher Husham, at this moment, I can't see dividing it up any other way. That's all. So if you can think a different way of dividing it up, I'm all ears. But I think it's pretty late here, so I really have to.
Am I muted or can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you fine. Go ahead. Please ask.
First of all, that was brilliant, and I totally, thoroughly appreciated it. I have a question for you.
Sure.
There were like two versions of the creation story.
Yes.
And are there two versions of the marriage and wedding story?
Well, there's two marriages here. We have, yeah, here's Leah. And here's Rachel in G, which I skipped over. There's hardly anything here. Look at the difference. We have all this beautiful language for Leah, for Rachel's marriages. Vayitein lo at Rachel bito lo leisha. He just gave her. There's no vayikach. There's no vayavo. Look at the parallel. Vayitein lo at Rachel bito lo leisha. This is Lavan. He gave Yaakov Rachel. Next verse. Vayitain Lavan LaRachel Bito Bilha. In the same Vayitain, he gave her Rachel and he gave Rachel Bilha. It's like, you know, this is Lavan's version of it. I mean, Lavan looks at Rachel as like just one of the sheep. And yeah, he gave him Rachel. He gave Rachel a maid. And then verse 30 is Vayavo Gam El Rachel. Yeah. And the gum. That's the marriage. That's it. This two verses. And look at Leah's marriage.
And what you were saying before about the one that God intended to be the primary marriage. And in the creation stories, it seems like one is God's point of view and one is man's point of view. And it seems like that's what you're saying here, that one marriage is sort of from yes. this, coming from God's perspective.
Uh-huh.
And Yaakov is kind of stuck in seeing that Rachel is his wife when really Leah is his wife. And it's just an interesting, the parallel sheds light on both. It sheds light on the story and on the two weddings, the two marriages.
Wow, that's very nice. Thank you. Yes, very good. Thank you.
I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Thank you all for staying. You can ask questions. Let me I'll stop the share so I can see your faces better. Whoops.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chaim.
Have a good day. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. Yes, Chaim Krantzler, what did you want to say?
Well, you could also see this as the evolution of Yaakov. In the beginning, he says, he wakes up from his dream and he says, Va'anochi lo yadati. And Va'anochi is sometimes interpreted as he didn't know God, or Va'anochi, his Anochi was getting in the way. And we see his Anochi was getting in the way throughout the story. But then in the very end, he sees God's hand and it says Machanaim. So you see the evolution of Yaakov to come back to Canaan as a different person, a little bit less self-centered, as you said. For.
Right, right. In fact, now when he finally finishes fighting with himself, and he seems to come to some rapprochement with the Esav within him, which somebody said before, I'm making him sound too much like Esav. I'm not making him sound like Esav. He's making himself sound like Esav. He has to decide who he is. Am I Yaakov or am I Esav? Or what am I or who am I? And then he becomes two people. He be Yaakov and Yisrael. Yaakov never disappears. There's two personalities. There's two of them inside of one body. Sometimes Yaakov speaks. Sometimes Yisrael speaks. Sometimes Yisrael interrupts Yaakov. Sometimes Yaakov wants to say something and Yisrael stops him. We'll see that more as their stories unfold.
I wonder whether the mishteh that bothered one of your is shtei nashim.
Wait a minute. Isn't that the joke about Vashti?
I don't know.
Oh, she had a mishteh nashim something. It's a joke, but no, but it has to do with two women. Yes. That's very good.
That's a good one. And so this is a Purim. This is a Purim spiel.
No, it's not. It's shut in the drinking.
Okay.
The drinking.
Okay. What I oh yeah. Oh, there's so much. There's so much in this parsha that I just left out. But I just wanted you to see the kiasti, because it does focus the attention on something that you might not have thought of as something to focus your attention on.
I hadn't, and I want to say this was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Thank you.
Great. No, not right. Beyond fantastic.
Great.
Thank you. Okay. All right.
Even though I didn't like the way you linked Shimon with Yehuda. It's definitely about Yehuda. I'm sure about that. I'm sure of that.
That's fine. That's fine.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom, everyone.
Wow.
And happy Thanksgiving.
Are you going to be doing another Devar Torah for another Parsha soon?
Wait a minute. Let me stop the recording. Whoops. Wait a minute. Uh-oh. Did I just leave you all? Oh, you're still there. Okay. I can stop the recording, but we can still talk.